So yep. When Jeff and I used to do this, we would give like 3 dates. June 14th, 2018. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 225. I'm Matt Kalib, senior developer at Lullabot. With me, as always, co-host of the show, senior front-end developer, Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Awesome. And you actually are just back from a Drupal event that happened in Europe, right? Where were you?
It was more of a kind of a general front-end.
Oh, it wasn't Drupal.
Event. Yeah.
But off the island.
Okay. Yeah, had a little bit of a Drupal focus with it because it has its lineage coming from the Drupal community. I came back from Front End United in Utrecht in the Netherlands.
Utrecht.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
It was a beautiful city. It's the oldest city in the Netherlands, and it has a bunch of cool canals and cool looking medieval towers and stuff.
And what was kind of the deal with Front End United? What was going on?
Well, it's a standard conference, there was also a big JavaScript sprint there. When I say JavaScript, I'm talking about JavaScript and Drupal core. So there was a number of core committers that showed up, and JavaScript maintainers, and just regular old developers to help get stuff done.
And you ran into an old friend there.
I did. I ran into Angie Byron.
She's on the podcast today.
Hi, Angie.
Hello.
Hey, Angie.
I'm really glad to be here. Thank you. Hi.
Yeah. So Angie is the Senior Director of Product and Community Development at Acquia. She's from Vancouver, British Columbia. She's a Drupal Core Product Manager, and I'm told that she's currently sipping a Tim Hortons iced cappuccino.
That's right. It's the Canadian way.
Are we allowed to be friends since the thaw or like the iced over communications between the United States and Canada now?
I think we're allowed to be friends, but I think if we trade anything with one another, we have to jack up the price inexplicably high. I think that's how
that works. Yes. All right. So we're going to start. You're going to start charging for like Drupal stuff?
Ooh.
Drupal commits. Yeah. Drupal commits are now much more pricey to bribe out of me than they used to be.
There's a tariff.
Anyway. Yeah. How about you guys? Are you tariffing? Let's see. Oh man, don't tariff junk food. You guys have the best ever. Every time I go to the States, I'm like loading up on like Snickers ice cream bars. And you guys have like different varieties of Twinkies and Oreos and stuff. It's like amazing. So you know,
I think it's fantastic that the United States is known for junk food.
At least around here. Oh, and cheap gas too, but you know.
Yeah.
Angie, you used to be a Lullabot, right?
I did, yeah. I was a Lullabot from, geez, what it would be, 2006 till 2011. So 5 years.
Awesome.
I left because I got a really great opportunity to kind of do community work full time. So that's what I do over at Acquia. Is my job is basically to go out and help the community be awesome through, you know, running sprints, through helping promote efforts of different initiatives, for helping them plan different things, working with developers to get their changes into Drupal, all that kind of stuff. But I love Lullabot. You guys are awesome.
Aw, we love Angie too.
Aw.
So what do you say takes up most of your time these days?
I'd say my time is mostly taken up by Drupal. So there's, I don't even know anymore, night 13 initiatives or something like that now. We keep adding more of them because there's more awesomeness we want to do in Drupal 8. So working with those teams, keeping the community up to date on what's happening where, making sure those initiatives stay on track for different versions of Drupal and planning out what we're going to do in future versions of Drupal, I'd say that takes up most of my time. The other thing that takes a lot of my time that I also really love is my daughter, Lily, who just turned 5. So she is like, a super big girl now. And she like, you know, is independent, does all the things herself and all that kind of stuff. And she's just adorable and hilarious. And I love her.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So within Drupal, isn't it great that here we are well into Drupal 8, but Drupal as a product is still improving and evolving? Stuff is getting added. That's not the way it used to work.
No, that is not the way it used to work. In fact, Drupal 7, I think, still ships with whatever crappy version of jQuery there was in like January of 2011.
1.4.
Is it 1.4? Yeah. So that you have that to look forward to in your Drupal 7 installs. But the other fantastic thing is like, oh my God, when we say a Drupal 8 release is going to come out on X date, it actually comes out on that day. What? Like, that's completely new. I know.
What happened to when it's ready?
I know, right? Now it's just always ready, and we just give you whatever you get, and then whatever you don't get comes later. That's
So is that you get what you get and you don't throw a fit?
Yeah, you get what you get and you don't get upset. That's what.
That's what I tell my daughter.
Yeah, exactly. So, but no, it's great. We've transitioned from a when it's ready model, which is when is Drupal 8 coming out? Who knows? There were betting pools, there were tears and gnashing of teeth and all this kind of stuff. So now we release every 6 months and we give new features that are backwards compatible. So you can have your cake and eat it too.
So Angie, you mentioned initiatives. Do you have any particular initiatives that you want to talk about? Anything that's super exciting within Webchick land?
I'm honestly excited about all of the initiatives. I would say
that's a very diplomatic answer.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a very Canadian answer, okay, eh? Anyway. I would say the admin UI and JavaScript modernization initiative is kind of top of mind. That's what we were in Utrecht to talk about. Got together with a whole bunch of people. There were the members of the JavaScript initiative, which is Matt Grill, Sally Young, and myself. Members of the admin UI initiative, which is Christina Pimenez, Roy Schulten, Alex Pod, a framework manager, Lowry, a front-end framework manager. So it's kind of like the whole gang getting together to kind of spend the week to talk about, you know, some tough architectural blockers, future plans, all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, that would be something we could talk about. Otherwise, I'd also be happy to give like an overview of all the initiatives and what's happening with them if that is helpful to anyone.
Well, I say we should definitely do both, but let's keep it light on the JavaScript stuff just because that will be a future podcast.
Well, the first initiative is the admin UI and JavaScript modernization initiative. If you go in alphabetical order, which is how I'm going to go, because that's within the link that I'm putting in the sidebar here.
So yeah, we'll have a link in the show notes that has the list of the initiatives on it, right? Is that what you're reading from,
yep.
Angie?
So admin UI and JavaScript modernization. So essentially, we last revamped Drupal's admin experience really in Drupal 7. That was when we added the new admin theme, new at the time called 7. That's when we, you know, added jQuery UI, cutting edge technology at the time. These days, admin experiences are a little bit more like, let's say, robust and feature filled than that. They also are kind of a lot more nicely designed than the old design. The old design we had was great actually for the time, but Drupal 7 was about 7 years ago now. So it just looks a little dated compared to what, you know, people kind of expect out of an admin interface. And so we had two separate initiatives, an admin UI initiative, which was aiming to revamp the 7 theme, the default theme in Drupal 8. Just for maximum confusion, we kept the 7 name because we thought that would be fun for people to be confused. But anyway, so we an initiative around making that look nicer and use accessible colors and modern design patterns, component-based design, all this kind of cool jazz. And at the same time, starting up a JavaScript modernization initiative, which is aiming to take all the JavaScript that was added in, you know, 2007, 2009, 2011, that era, and kind of bring it up to modern standards like Airbnb coding standards, that sort of thing. And in addition to that, adopting a JavaScript framework, which we chose React, to basically create really rich interactions that people expect. So things like clicking around with no page refreshes, being able to do stuff like autosave, you know, content so it doesn't get lost, all that kind of good stuff. The cool thing about the JavaScript modernization initiative is it's going to be dog fooding our REST API. Which is the API first initiative, which is great because that means that any improvements that we do in either of those initiatives are only going to help anybody trying to do headless Drupal with Vue or Angular or pick a framework that isn't even exist yet, but will be invented by next Tuesday. So I'm really excited about that one. I think that by the end of that, we'll have a really nicely redesigned admin experience. That'll look a lot more modern than what people expect. And then in addition to that, we'll have some really robust, really, I call it swooshy wooshy, you know, like interactions in the admin experience that people will come to love and expect and stuff like that. So I think that's a really exciting one. API first is kind of the piggyback off of that. And that's the underlying APIs that that JavaScript and other sort of, you know, front ends, whether it's a kiosk in the mall or a, you know, web service consumer or whatever is going to use under the hood. So, yeah. API first, they've done a lot of work on the REST API that's in Drupal core that shipped with Drupal 8. So closing some feature gaps, making it more performant, improving the developer experience, that kind of thing. And then the biggest thing they're trying to work on, I don't know if it'll get into 8.6 or not, but then 8.7 if not, would be getting JSON API, which is a kind of a standard specification that a lot of different JavaScript consumers know how to use, getting that into core as like the default output. So that's kind of all the things that they're working on. There's an initiative around automatic updates. We get this complaint a lot that, you know, you get Drupal site up and running and then it's actually really expensive to keep it going because there are security updates, there are core and contrib bug fix updates and that kind of thing. So having a means to automatically grab that stuff and apply it would be really, really helpful, starting with security updates because they're obviously the most important ones. An initiative that piggybacks off of that is the Composer in Core initiative. So the Composer in Core initiative is like fixing the underlying support for Composer, which is this command line kind of dependency management thing, sort of equivalent to NPM in Node or, I don't know, one of the pickup thing in Linux that installs dependencies for stuff. If we get that working really well from a manual perspective, then we can automate that and provide a graphical interface on top of it for site builders. And so that whole situation is really exciting to get that figured out because people are using Composer right now, but it's very clunky and it makes people want to stab things. And so we're into no stabbing Drupal 8.
So automatic updates, that's actually something that people want.
It is something that a lot of people want. So there's kind of like a few different classes of Drupal sites, right? Like there's we have a full development team and we want very hands-on. We want to take that version of that module and this version of that module particularly and kind of, you know, craft it very carefully, that kind of stuff, right? And people who are either actively building a site or people who have a development team on standby after the site is built, they probably don't want this feature. But then there's everybody else, like me. I set up a Drupal site, webchick.net. I haven't, you know, done anything with it in ages, but I definitely have to update it every time a security vulnerability is released because I don't want anything to, because, you know, how funny would that be if Webchick's website got hacked? Ha ha, right? And so it's like an extra thing I have to remember. And then I might have some test sites somewhere that I forgot about and this kind of stuff. So having security updates automatically applied to those kind of, you know, sites that are more in maintenance mode and just kind of out there on the internet would be really beneficial for technical and non-technical users alike.
Sure.
It's one of the things, honestly, that stops me from picking Drupal for a lot of like my non-technical friends and family, because I could get Drupal up and running and put it in a way that they can use it for their blog or for their restaurant website or whatever, but then I know me and I know I'm never going to remember to update the security stuff on it, and then it becomes problematic to put them on something like that versus something like WordPress that just takes care of it for you.
Yeah,
I've heard that from a number of people.
Yep,
that makes sense.
So yeah, but it is not required, so there will be a way to shut it off or opt into it. I'm not sure how they're planning to do it. It's still very much in like the planning phases. It's not, you know, there's no code written for this yet that I know of. But it definitely, we will allow for the fact that some people want to manage everything with console and Git, and they want to, you know, plug in an Ethernet based, you know, fingerprint scanner before whatever. It'll support all those things. But for people who don't need that level of control, it'll be a really nice way to ensure that, you know, Drupal maintains its, you know, its reputation as being a really secure open source CMS. So.
Well, that's cool. I mean, it's interesting to hear this. You know, I think Mike and I end up oftentimes being stuck in this myopic perspective of huge websites with huge teams. And, you know, we want to build a website a certain way and we don't want a computer freaking changing it out from under us.
So. Yeah. And that's totally fair. And so we don't want to remove the ability for that. But at the same time, it would help a lot. I think, you know, I would have to look at the stats, but, you know, we had a couple of a pretty big security, well, one big security vulnerability and then like a follow-up that happened like a month later. But yeah, so there's a non-trivial number of sites still vulnerable to that. And so this would help eliminate that possibility, which would be great. Config management 2.0. So we did a config management initiative in Drupal 8. It was very successful. You can deploy stuff now. Yay! All of the things in Drupal that handle configuration go through a standard mechanism now. Instead of in Drupal 7, you had update hooks, you had variable set and variable get, you had this, that, and the other thing. It was just like, you know, C tools, exportables, you had all kinds of different things. In Drupal 8, it's great because everything goes through a consistent system.
And so far in my experience of working with it, it's given me less heartburn than Features ever has. So that's great to hear. Yeah.
That's great to hear. However, it by design, because we needed to, I don't know, ship Drupal 8 or something. Someone at some point thought that might be a good idea to actually ship the thing that we were working on. It doesn't support all of the varied different workflows that people liked with Features, like the ability to, for example, package up a set of configuration and export it as a package, or the ability to say install a site from an existing set of configuration, or the ability to deploy, you know, parts of configuration, or this kind of thing. There's all kinds of contributed modules that let you do this. So it's not like you can't do any of this, but Core chose to limit the amount of fanciness, if you will, that it supported in its configuration management APIs. So the configuration management 2.0 issue is about taking a look at, now that this has been out in the wild for a few months, a few years at this point, actually, you know, what are the most common workflows that people are lacking? And can we, you know, either put those into Core or at least expand the Core API so that those are easier for people to do? And so there's an initiative going around that they're currently kind of in the let's figure out what we want to do phases. And that's really awesome. So people are working on that, and hopefully we'll have some really great results for that in 8.7. That's the hope.
Cool.
Documentation is the next initiative. No one is ever happy with our documentation ever, but Matthew Grasmick, one of my coworkers, went through and kind of did a comparison between, if I were brand new and I was starting Drupal from scratch today, how would I get it up and running? And found that whole process extremely trying and taxing, because you kind of get sent into many different directions. There's no like one click install. There's like a many, you know, like paths you can go down. You go to the documentation, it's like, here's the 37 different ways you could possibly install it, instead of like, here's the one way that works for 80% of people. Do that. And if it doesn't work, then come back here and we'll tell you how to use Nginx on IIS and, you know, whatever, Python or something. You know what I mean? Like, people have all kinds of crazy ways that they install Drupal. So this initiative is kind of a three-pronged initiative. It's aiming to, one, set up the idea of like quick start guides that are just like simple, here's how to get Drupal up and running. Here's how to use the configuration management system. Here's how to use Composer with Drupal. Just short, brief things that apply to like 80% of the cases and are kind of like the starting point that you should use, and link off to more detailed stuff. The second prong of that is Drupal.org has some UX challenges where there is a whole set of documentation that is kind of like a wiki in a way, where any rando can go in there and edit or create pages and stuff like that. And that's great for some things, you know, like that allows contributed modules to have documentation in the handbook that no documentation maintainer overseeing the whole thing would ever think to write a tutorial for, you know, the blah, blah module, say. However, it's not good when there's mass duplication, especially of really critical starting point and evaluator documentation, like how to get started, or like how to set up Composer and that kind of stuff. So they're aiming to do some UX changes on Drupal.org to point people to the curated documentation. So documentation that is kept in version control and has a kind of a moderation process around it, has intentional structure behind it, and this kind of thing, like the user guide and these new quick start guides.
Yeah.
And then the third aspect of that is like looking at all of the documentation and try to like figure out what's there and start removing stuff we don't need anymore, start consolidating that kind of thing, so that entryway, instead of it being 30 plus clicks, is more like a couple of clicks in like 5 minutes.
Couple of really, really big things there, but one thing I'd like to point out is that I'm not sure that Drupal was ever easy to somebody who doesn't know what they're doing when they start. I remember jumping in and it was like, oh, here, let's install Drupal. Oh, but first you need Apache and MySQL, and chances are you need something like XAMPP or MAMP or whatever on your computer to make that kind of thing work. And, you know, here's three or four other pieces of technology you probably don't understand, like Apache's mod rewrite and, you know, other weird things. But I guess when we keep layering other technologies on top of it, that list gets longer and longer. So it's great that, you know, that kind of thing is being revisited. And
yeah, I think the technology stack's gotten deeper because there's now Composer, Drush is a thing, all this kind of stuff. The other thing is that even if the set of instructions were comprehensive and covered all of that, the problem is there's like literally 30 of them. Like there's 30 different how to install Drupal pages. And you go in there, you don't, like none of them are obviously the writer of the ones. So you're just kind of overwhelmed by, oh my God, like which of these do I pick? Like,
are you going to put it on a server someplace? Are you going to put it on your computer? Logos? Are you a Windows user? Like, I mean, there's lots of different options. Is it a multi-site environment? Which version of PHP do you want to run? I don't know.
Right.
There's lots
and
of
all of
things.
That is not, it's like, that's great. Once you've like figured out you're going to use Drupal, like fine, then you can delve into them. But people who are just like, I don't even know what a Drupal is. I just want to try this thing for 5 minutes and see how it shakes out. Before I go into all of the, Bible of how to install and configure it properly, they really run into a wall there because we don't really have anything for that audience at the current.
We're trying to avoid the, I tried Drupal, it didn't work, so I moved on.
We're trying to avoid that a lot. There's another initiative that touches on that, which is the out of the box initiative.
Sure.
And that initiative is wonderful. Yeah, that basically ships with another profile. So when you're installing Drupal, you have the option of this thing. It's called Umami Demo. And the Umami Demo is, it sets up Drupal pre-configured with content types and views and stuff like that, and a theme for a restaurant website. So you can see Drupal actually doing
it. Yeah, we had
them
on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, that team is amazing. Yeah, they've done excellent work. So having that available out of the box is critical. So, because oftentimes we see people, it's interesting. People, start with, they hear about Drupal, they install it, and they literally can't figure out what the heck it's supposed to do. It's just like an ugly blog with no content, basically, is what it looks like. And so they're like, well, I'm not using this. And then they go install like WordPress, and it's very pretty and it's obvious what it does out of the box. And they're like, oh, great. And then they go and use WordPress for years before they encounter a use case or like a ambitious digital experience that they can't do with WordPress. And then they begrudgingly go back to Drupal. And they're like, oh shit, Drupal's awesome. Oh crap, I can't swear.
Why?
Oh, can I? Sweet.
It's okay. Yeah. We're marked explicit on iTunes.
Oh, that's perfect.
not because we're truly explicit. It's just that we're not exactly always clean.
Yeah, because like back when I used to do these with Jeff Robbins and Addy, I literally had to have a sticky on my monitor that said, do not swear. And I had to like look at that constantly while I was on the podcast. So that's great that you guys have just like, you're like, yeah, people are going to swear. It's fine. Anyway, that's fine. So they're like, wowzers, how about that? Drupal is great, and I really wish someone would have told me like 10 years ago that it was great, and so that's what I think Out of the Box initiative and the documentation initiative are both getting at, is getting people to realize more like in the first 5 minutes of using Drupal why it's awesome, like what the power of it is, why you would choose it over other solutions, all that kind of stuff, rather than having to do hours and hours of poking around to try and figure that out. So
I think the design efforts with the Umami team are really great too, because it kind of opens up the eyes of, hey, it's Drupal and it doesn't have to look like crap.
Yeah. Wow. What a concept.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, it's like, I don't want to disparage efforts of people who worked on the Bardic theme. It's a challenging thing to design a theme that you have no idea what the content's going to be, right?
There's plenty of websites out there that use Bardic and it's totally serviceable.
It's serviceable.
Yeah, it's serviceable.
It's from 2010.
Exactly. Yeah, it's serviceable. So when you're designing for a known use case and a known set of content, you can really make the design look awesome, which is why the demo site is so great, because they know exactly what they're designing for. They're designing for a restaurant website that's going to have this content on it. So the theme can be a lot more representative of what an actual website would use versus kind of this generic sort of shell that's vaguely blue and has to kind of look good, and no matter if there's a calendar there or some kind of crazy image of something or a pop-up or anything like that.
So, cool.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we got here? Extending security support. This is also getting to the challenge around upgrades. So the great thing about Drupal 8 is that every 6 months there's new stuff. Yay, right? The bad thing about every 6 months there's new stuff is that when those minor, they're called minor releases, when it goes 8.1 to 8.2 to 8.3, when those minor releases come out, it can take a while to test everything and make sure that none of those new additions break anything that you have. Nothing should break. We intentionally make things backwards compatible. We put a lot of care into ensuring that. But every once in a while, stuff happens, right? If we have to upgrade our version of Symfony because Symfony drops security support for the one that we shipped Drupal 8.0 with, then that may have ramifications in downstream codes. So people are trying their best to keep up these minor releases, but really we only currently give people about a 6 week window between when Drupal, say, 8.6 ships and when Drupal 8.5 loses security support altogether. And it's a very short window of time, particularly if you are the kind of, you know, like you mentioned earlier, having sites with big development teams with very ambitious goals and lots of moving parts, you know, those kinds of sites need a little bit longer to kind of let things bake. And so we're working on, you know, introducing the idea of extending security support back one minor release. So in other words, when 8.6 ships, still supporting 8.5 until 8.7 ships. That's the idea behind it. We're still kind of negotiating that with the security team because the security team's all volunteer. But the release managers are on board and we're kind of been testing this out with like kind of the security release or security releases that have come out since, over the summer and over the spring, kind of testing that by backporting those all the way to 8.4 to kind of see how it goes. And hopefully once, if that goes well, we can just make that the policy. And then that gives people more like 6 months than 6 weeks to do those updates. And that's a lot more manageable for people, I think.
Yeah. I haven't done it yet. How is the process of upgrading your site across a minor release? Is it just like it used to be with Drupal 7
I also
going from... oh, well, there you go.
Yes, it is that. Yeah.
It's supposed to be just update.php.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. That's how it is. However, what can happen is external tools such as Drush or Console or some other module. You know, the minor version schedules require all people to be using the APIs very consistently. And so, if anyone is not using an API consistently, or they're using something that's not actually an API but kind of a private trick workaround thing, that becomes very apparent when stuff changes. And so you can see breakages in external tools in particular. Everything in core should work fine, but some of the pain around, and another area where this comes up too is if we move a module into core. So for example, media entity moved into core's media API, that can involve some updates being required in that series of modules. The good news is we should hopefully stop moving stuff into core soon because we're getting to the point where all of the major initiatives we had in Drupal 8 are starting to land. And there's actually real functionality, you know, workspaces or workflow, media layouts, that kind of stuff. So hopefully we will not be adding too many more contrib modules to core, at least the major authoring experience ones, because we're kind of, you know, getting there with all of that. But when that happens, that can be disruptive as well. So giving people a longer time to kind of wrangle with any ramifications that happen on their site is a good thing.
Cool. What's next?
Speaking of layouts, the layout initiative. Yeah. I am so excited about the layout initiative. It is like, it's so great.
We're just rehashing our last few podcasts. Yeah, this is awesome. So layout initiative.
Oh man,
really cool.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
no, that's good. I think it's like, great to put it all here. In one place.
Yeah, if you don't have time to listen to all the podcasts, just listen to this one.
Exactly. This is kind of a quick rehash of our last several anyway. So yeah, layout initiative.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So layout initiative. What I really like about this one is this is an example of, you know, people who work in the field with Drupal kind of coming across the user story, which is that, you know, like people want to be able to create flexible layouts for their sites, not necessarily choose from hard-coded, you know, things, because you can end up in a situation where it's like 27 hard-coded layouts to choose from, and people get lazy and they just like, I don't know this one, and it's not quite right, and they work around it by stuffing things in the WYSIWYG editor or some unholy thing like that. And so this took feedback from real-world users and put an intentional design process around it and gave us a layout system that is built on the same foundations as panels and display suite and all of those other things. So it's API compatible with those, but has a much better user experience than panels or any of the other layout solutions. So you can basically add sections to your page, which are essentially like rows to a page, and then populate those pages and say, this is a 2-column section, a 3-column section, et cetera, and then populate those with blocks from your site. And they're working right now on being able to create little temporary blocks, you know, more or less like just for this one page only, I want a heading image, blah, right there. And I don't need to reuse it in multiple places. Drag and drop all the WYSI, you know, wee bang things, and applying that same interface to also laying out the content types themselves. So, you know, it's like, it's adding a lot of consistency how this stuff is done. And what I really love about it is it's giving a lot of power to content authors, because right now in Drupal core anyway, if you want a new layout, quote unquote, that's a coding thing, right? You have to create a new template and you got to wire it up so that template's used on that page and all this kind of stuff. And it's very sophisticated and very difficult. So I'm really excited that once this thing lands, it's going to give a lot of power to content authors to still remain within the site design guidelines, but be able to just free them up to do what they want to do without having to have a developer get involved. So yeah, that one I'm really excited about.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Media is another one I'm really excited about, because it's always super embarrassing to stand stock Drupal up text, to stock literally anything. You know what I mean? And it's like, I mean, Drupal 7 was great because now you can add images. So that's a big improvement.
images.
So very, you know, 2011. I know. That was pretty out there for us. You're like, okay, all right. I guess people like seeing pictures of stuff. Fine. No,
well, and that's not exactly fair, because there was an image field and there was the image module, and these things existed for a very long time.
Yeah.
It was totally doable.
But you had to go to contrib. Yeah.
But that was like step two. After you install Drupal, you're like, okay, go get image module and go, you know, there's lots of things.
Yeah, image
go
field.
Go get path auto and token.
And image it's magic like, and path yeah. auto and token. Yeah, exactly. So I'm excited that that's available out of the box. But the Media Initiative is adding even more awesomeness things. So they're adding the support for remote video so that you can paste in YouTube links and they'll turn into things. That's really awesome.
YouTube on your website?
Also,
no way.
I know. What? Yeah. People like videos now? Will the wonders never cease? But yeah, so that, and then the ability to reuse media you've already uploaded. So there's a media library in the works that lets you like choose from pre-selected, you know, if I upload that image of, I don't know, like that this is fine dog, you know, like the comic or the dog surrounded by fire. And then he's like, oh, this is fine. Yeah, that applies in many situations. You might want to reuse that on multiple blog posts about politics, about Drupal, about anything. And it's really, really limited. Anyway, and that's a cool initiative because the UI for that is being co-developed by, there's some Acquia people working on it, but the UX team, the Drupal UX team is also providing guidance there along with the accessibility team, because we're introducing a new pattern with the media library to allow people to check, you know, multiple images at once and do bulk operations. So ensuring that both looks good and also is accessible to screen readers and stuff like that. So yeah, a lot of great work happening on the media front too.
Cool.
Yeah. Migrate is almost done. Like super, super, almost done. The only thing it doesn't really work for anymore is multilingual sites. There's just a lot of really gnarly bits there, because Drupal 6's multilingual is different than Drupal 7's multilingual, which is different again from Drupal 8's multilingual. So there's just a lot of like little bits to figure out there. And so if you're not using a multilingual site, Migrate works great. If you are using a multilingual site, it still works, but you have to just kind of watch for some edge cases and stuff like that. And there's some patches that could use a review. So I'm really looking forward to Migrate not being an initiative anymore. That would be great, because it's done and people could just use it, which is more or less the state we're in now.
And, a site migration is going to be a pretty hands-on process anyway. Like if you're taking a site from here to there, you're probably going to end up doing a little extra work anyway. So it's not
exactly. Yeah. And I think that's why that hasn't, you know, gone, you know, like people haven't been swarming on that as much as they were in the early days, because at this point the API is stable. So anything that you need to do with the migration system, you can do if you could write code. We're just trying to close the gap for people who don't write code so that they can just click, you know, through their, it's essentially a update.php equivalent that migrates from one database to the other and poof, it's done for you.
That sounds like a magical place.
It is a magical place. There's unicorns. They fart rainbows. It's beautiful. It's really
weird. So how does that work? Do you like upload the, you know, the D7 or D6 database into Drupal 8 and it'll automatically start looking at it? Or is there
there's an upgrade.php instead of an update.php.
Okay.
You go there and then you give it your database credentials for the old database,
mm-hmm.
and it will scan the tables and it even knows how to figure out if it's a Drupal 6 or a Drupal 7 database. And we'll pick the right migrations accordingly. Yeah, it's pretty slick, honestly. It's great. I need to use it on webchick.net because that site is still embarrassingly Drupal 7. I have no excuse for that other than like, I have no time, but you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I tested it on webchick.net many times though, and it works great. It sucks in all your users, content, taxonomy, your blocks, all that kind of stuff. And it just whoop, and now it's Drupal 80. Yay. You have to do some things manually, like you have to pick your views and stuff,
you have to port your theme.
It works great. You do have to port your theme. That's true. Cause the theme system in Drupal 8 is completely different than Drupal 7. That's Twig, but it's much more betterer. So really it's a delight to port your theme. I'm going to say a delight. But it is a good excuse to get, you know, have you ever inherited a site and it's got like template files with like 30 lines of SQL in them, right?
Have seen those, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes. So it's a really good excuse to get rid of all of that kind of crap because you can't do that anymore. Like in Twig, it's like your template files are just HTML and little, you know, brackety things. That's it. So no 30 lines of SQL. You got to go put that in the, you know, in the business layer where it belongs. So that's pretty great. And the last one is workflow, and workflow is also awesome. The functionality to allow people to do drafts or pending legal review or any other arbitrary workflow states, that's in and it's stable. So that's stable as of 8.5.
So I can go write an article and say an editor needs to approve it before it can actually be published, and then somebody else might decide when it gets published. So the editor says, yes, this is good to go. And then the managing editor gets to say, this is live on the website or something like that. So these complex workflows all built into core.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Or it kicks it back and says like, yeah, this isn't good enough. Fix your apostrophes or whatever. Like, yeah, all of that's all in there. The next piece that they're working on is actually really great and kind of a differentiator because I don't know any other products that do this. So what they're working on is a concept called workspaces. So this is the ability to, you know, like by default, I think it has like staging and live or something like that. So it's like you can create your content on your staging workspace. And then if it all looks good together, then you can port it over to the live. That's kind of the basic thing.
That's the previous podcast right there, right? So you just kind of go and everything.
Oh, there you go.
Which is awesome, Angie.
But yeah, so I'm really stoked about this because this allows you to preview not just the content, like we have a preview button on Nodes, but your whole site, you know, your taxonomy terms, your paths, your menu items, all of that in one big chunk, and then move everything over when it's ready. It also allows for really cool use cases like what is our homepage going to look like if Trump wins the election again, or if whoever, Biden, I don't know, wins the election instead, you know. You got to have different people crying on the front page, depending on the outcome, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it allows you to kind of do A/B testing in a way of your content. And then once an event happens, you can instantly doop, shift everything over and see it all as one piece. So that's really great. It's also leading to a lot of underlying revision bugs getting taken care of and adding revision support for stuff that doesn't currently have it, like taxonomy terms and menu links and stuff like that. So
I think the election example is
because it's not.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
there's just enough of a U.S. Canada lag here.
Yeah. The delay here is killing us.
They put a tariff on our internet connection in order for us to be safe.
Yeah, they put like a 100 millisecond tariff on it.
That's right.
Yeah, but that election example, the election example you gave is really a good one because, you know, the website should be totally one way or totally the other way, just kind of depending on the outcome. And having that all prepped is great for a content team. And that's something that would be pretty tricky in a current version of Drupal and really a useful thing to be able to do. Sports as well. I know there are plenty of Drupal sites that are sports. Exactly. Hey, I just won the Super Bowl, and you know, having that website ready to go would be great.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be frantically creating content after the Super Bowl is won by somebody, right? You want that all ready to go ahead of time.
Yeah, you'll probably be creating some, but, you know, having it, you know, kind of at least a skeleton of what it might be, you know. Yeah. So have we made it through the list, Angie?
We made it through the list.
We've been talking Drupal 8 initiatives with Angie Webchick Byron. We'll come back right after this.
Hey, Jessica Deary from Drupal GovCon. How are you doing, Jessica?
I'm good, thanks.
Drupal GovCon, Mike. We're going to talk about Drupal GovCon. I haven't worked on a government website in like 6 years.
Yeah, well, there's evidently a bunch of them.
Well, and honestly, Drupal GovCon is not just for Gov. We really try to focus in and put our arms around our government community, and throwing the word government in the name of an event really makes a huge difference in government employees actually being able to attend. But we always like to say govies are people too, and the majority of the sessions that you'll find at our camp are really the types of things that no matter what industry you work in, what area you work in, you're going to find some value there.
And it's in the DC area, right?
Yeah, it's at the NIH campus in Bethesda, Maryland. It's at the Natcher Conference Center.
And what are the dates?
The dates, so the very first day, August 21st, is just all training. We have some wonderful training sponsors that offer training the 3 days of the conference and the day before. So August 21st is just training, and then August 22nd through 24th is when the actual camp is. We have sessions, training, we have a code sprint lounge, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I think I remember reading that Drupalize Me is going to be doing some theme training up at Drupal GovCon. Is that correct?
They are. They are one of our training sponsors. We have several training sponsors who are still in the process of submitting what they're actually going to be teaching. But hopefully by the week of June 25th, we'll have that information online and people will be able to register for the courses too.
How many people are you expecting?
We cap at around 800, 850. As a free event, you know, there's always a significant drop off. Last year we had close to 1600 people register.
Whoa.
We had close to 900 show up. So we did have 1 year where we had almost 1,000 people and we realized that is just too big.
Yeah.
Our all volunteer group to handle. So we cap it, we waitlist it, but between 800 and 900 is kind of where we've hit.
Bad camp of the East Coast, huh?
Pretty much. I understand. I think we are the largest camp east of the Mississippi.
Right on.
Sounds amazing. I am planning on going and hopefully speaking there. So I'm really excited.
That's awesome. Thank you. I really appreciate it. You know, it's, that we are an all volunteer organization. So every effort that's put into, you know, a 900-person, 4-day sessions event is run by volunteers. And so when people come and they enjoy it and they say nice things, it really makes it all worthwhile because it is a lot of work.
I can imagine. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on and telling us about it.
Yeah. Thanks, guys, for having me.
I appreciate it.
I hope to see you guys there.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Angie Webchick Byron, former Lullabot, now Aquian, and Lullabot podcast. And we're talking, we just got a rundown of all the amazingly awesome Drupal 8 initiatives.
You know, Angie, you spoke about all of those initiatives like you've spoken about them before. Are you still traveling to a lot of different camps and conferences and preaching Drupal?
Yeah, I'd say I travel about once a month or so to one thing or another. So it was Utrecht last month. This month is Build Week. It's in Acquia. It's like DrupalCon Acquia, basically. It's
cool.
All the engineers get together and like nerd out together. Yeah, I'm super excited about that. And then next month, I'm actually going home to Minnesota with my daughter for a family visit. Whoa. So that'll be really fun. But yeah, I really enjoy getting out to events, seeing local people, you know, just working in person with people. It's funny how much, getting together in person we do, given the nature that what we're working on is a thing to allow people to collaborate online.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Are you giving any talks these days?
I'm trying to avoid giving talks because I like giving the stage to other people to kind of do that. You know, like Gabor's going to be giving a talk at Dev Days about kind of an initiative rundown. I think that'll be really awesome. I somehow avoided giving a talk at all at Front End United, so that was great. So I just had to show up and do my sprinting thing.
Cool.
But yeah, when I talk about things, I tend to want to talk about either kind of a what's happening in Drupal or you know, how to contribute to Drupal. That's a big topic near and dear to my heart, or, you know, all these kinds of different things. Cause I love Drupal and I love people to get excited about it like I am.
I love hearing from you, Angie. If I make it to a Drupal conference, it's you and Jeff Eaton that I always have penciled in sessions that I can't miss. So I'd love to hear.
Oh man, Jeff Eaton gives the best sessions. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. We kind of talked about it a little bit when we were mentioning the documentation initiative. So if I were a new Drupal user or a new prospective Drupal user, I suppose, where would I start? Like how would I get going, like right now, given the current landscape?
Yeah. So I would say, okay, the fastest way to get to work would be there's a website called simplytest.me. I would go there, pick Drupal from the list of things to install, and pick Umami Demo as the thing to look at. That would get you up and running with Umami. You could click around and see what Drupal's doing in, you know, say 5 minutes or less. It's a little bit technical to kind of, you know, type it in, get the thing from the drop down, all that kind of stuff. But that's a really great way to just try Drupal out and see how it works. The other thing, though, I would mainly say is if you're interested in Drupal at all, don't bother with downloading, installing, all that kind of stuff. But go look on groups.drupal.org or meetup.com or, you know, something like that, and find the local user group in your area. Because there are local user groups all over the world. That gets you in the room with people who know Drupal really well, or some people who don't know Drupal at all. But at least when you say the word Drupal, they don't go, oh, bless you, you know, because they know what that is. I would go to something like that and meet people in real life. If there's a camp happening in your area, go to that. Because that's a really great way to not only, you know, figure out how to get Drupal installed and all of that kind of stuff, but also to meet people who are into Drupal and listen to what they say about it, what they use it for, why they're excited about it, what modules they use for that, you know, that kind of thing. I would say that's hands down the best way to get involved. It also gets you contacts if you run into problems or if you need to hire somebody to solve a problem for you at some point. It's a lot easier to get into the community if you have kind of a face with a name kind of thing. A lot of these local user groups also have channels on Drupal Slack, so you can go, you know, talk to people online first, kind of get to know them a little bit before you show up in person to some bar or wherever they meet. So that is usually my advice for anyone trying to get into any technology, is try and go there through people, because websites can be cold and impersonal. They can be out of date. They cannot always have the best information. So that would be my advice. But if you want the nuts and bolts of, I just want to get Drupal up and running and I don't want to talk to anyone, simply test me. That would be the way I would use.
You know, before I went and moved to the middle of nowhere, the user groups were amazing and great. And I definitely recommend that. And that's actually something that I hadn't considered for a new person. Mm-hmm. So that's a great recommendation. And there's always a friendly person there. Yeah. Willing to help out. So.
There is. And if there's not a group in your area, just try, you know, putting up a thing. It's like, I live in, you know, Chilliwack, BC, whatever. and I'm going to be at this coffee shop at this time and see who shows up. Because I swear, I kid you not, I used to live in this really small town called Port Moody. And I just put a meetup. I was like, I don't know, you know, let's see if anyone shows up. I just put a meetup at this little coffee shop in Port Moody, BC, which is like 45 minutes away from Vancouver. Like, no one's ever heard of it. And people actually came. It was like 9 or 10 people there. It was awesome. So, you know, you never know. You could be like, you could become the de facto organizer of your, Matt, where do you live?
I live in the middle of nowhere, almost Nebraska, northeast Colorado.
You could organize a Drupal group with your farm animals.
That's true.
Yeah, it's like several cattle, some pigs. Yeah, there you go. What else do you have out there?
I'm just a regular old McDonald. So yeah.
Old McCleave.
That's excellent. But yeah. So anyway, that's my thing. Just because I know the difference between me getting involved in Drupal via the website, which is how I originally got involved, and via IRC and stuff, chatting to people was helpful. So that was definitely good. But when I went to my first Drupal events, which was in 2006, the one in Vancouver, actually, that was just life changing. It was like, oh my God, like here's the face of Merlin of Chaos, or the face of Dries, or the face of all these people. And they're nice people and they talk to me and oh my God, you know, like that kind of thing. And just seeing the energy around Drupal, and you know, if you attend a DrupalCon and you go to the sprint room, you know, on that last day, it's like a football stadium size room full of tables, full of people working on awesome things. And they're so approachable. You can go up and just say, hey, I don't know anything about testing, but I'm kind of interested, and be like, great, stop by. Here's an issue to work on. Let me, you know, like, here's how it works. It's just like, it's so amazing to be part of this community that's so welcoming and friendly. And I've learned from interacting with other open source communities that not all communities are like that necessarily. And so, yeah, it's that would be my recommendation.
And I think you just probably answered my follow-up question. I was going to go to the other end of the spectrum and say, if I wanted to get involved with Core, how would I do that? And it sounds like, you know, attending a sprint would be a good
Actually,
way.
Actually, I have an answer for that. So if we don't, yes. So if you can attend a sprint or you can attend an event, do that. However, I started this process in concert with the Drupal Association, because now that there's like, I don't even know how many initiatives, but all of those stinking initiatives that I just rattled off, that's a lot to keep track of and stuff.
Yeah.
So nowadays I would say go to the strategic initiatives page, which will be in the comments there. And then each one of those links, this will be good incentive to make sure this is done by the time this podcast goes up. But anyway, each one of those links will link to a landing page, such as the admin UI and JavaScript modernization. It tells you stuff like, here's what we're working on. Here's a pretty screenshot or a demo of what it does. Here's who's working on it. These are the different initiative leads. So you have someone to talk to. Here's where we talk. Here's where you can follow our status updates on Twitter. You know, here's when we meet, where we meet. And here's some stuff to work on if you're interested in jumping in. And so I would say those pages are the best places to jump off. So if you're interested in any of the, I droned on and on for like 20 minutes there, any of that stuff that you'd be interested in, like, ooh, I know stuff about React, or ooh, I've done a lot of stuff with web services, or I have opinions about configuration management, or whatever it is, you know, go to those pages and talk to the people listed there and get involved. That would be my recommendation. And that's a great way to get involved with people that you can't physically see, because we all live all over the world. But jumping in on one of those meetings where they're talking about whatever topics they're discussing, getting involved by reviewing an issue or supplying a patch to an issue or providing usability review for an issue, all kinds of things are really, really helpful there. So that would be my recommendation for Core specifically.
So we could do the Blue Genie question.
That's good.
Yeah.
What is a Blue Genie question?
Oh,
yeah.
It's very special to the Lullabot podcast these days. Anytime we have somebody on that's working on great things, we ask them what they would do if they had a Blue Genie.
And the Blue Genie can write something within Drupal, or like do something. It can also like upgrade, say like Drupal.org to Drupal 8 or something like that. It'll do it perfectly the first time.
Yeah.
But it'll only do one thing.
Oh, wow.
You have one wish for the genie, and it'll do anything you want.
Oh, wow. Huh.
I don't think you can wish for more wishes, though.
No, that would be against the rules.
All right. I'm thinking about this carefully. Here's what I think I would wish for. I think I would wish for the how to contribute section of Drupal.org to be revamped so that a prospective person who wanted to get involved, it would be like a choose your own adventure kind of thing. Be like, hey, you, what are you interested in? And you can say, I'm interested in these things. How much time do you got? I got 5 minutes. I got a weekend. I got 50% time with it. Okay. And then it would point you to an issue and a person. And we would have like a robust mentoring program set up so that like people could be pointed to an issue that was really within their interest. It was something that needed to get done. And it was something that had someone around to kind of help them with so that we could get people over that hump. Because I think a lot of people like Drupal and they are smart and talented. And even if they're not smart and talented, particularly they have a lot of time on their hands or whatever, they have IE, whoa, anything. And the ability to like matchmake those people with the people who need help would be amazing. Like OkCupid for like initiative owners and prospective contributors. I think that would be great.
That's really creative. I like it.
I was trying to think of something that someone wouldn't have said before. Because otherwise it'd be like, I don't know, Drupal 9.
No, that's totally.
I just left you speechless.
What is the one thing that you think is holding up Drupal right now from being what it could be?
That's another great question, Matt Cleave.
I think the one thing holding up, this is kind of a cheap answer, but I think the one thing holding up is that the initiatives we started back in 2015, 2016, aren't completed yet. So were we to have already a stable layout system, stable media, stable workspaces, and all that kind of stuff, revamped admin UI, et cetera, well, then we'd be super bored. No, I'm just kidding. Then we would start working on all the other things that we could be working on, like a wow, what if we made field UI something that people could actually understand? Or, you know, what if we, really focused on making sure that the migration path was super solid? What if we focused on, you know, getting other systems into Drupal really easily? What if we focused on, you know, other world domination plans we might want to do? I think the fact that we have to split our time right now between future reaching stuff like the REST API, the admin UI redesign and workspaces, along with kind of what most people consider table stakes, like, well, that should just be there in the CMS, like layout, media, and a migration path and so on. I think that is challenging because it's a lot to take on at once. And so we're pushing many balls forward and everything is improving. But I think it's improving at a rate that's really, it's slower than it could be because we're so stratified across many different things. So I think the number one thing that we could do to improve Drupal would be to get those initiatives cleaned up and done and dusted so that they're there and they're ready to go. So that we can either recombine focus on the new fangledy stuff that puts us ahead of the pack, you know, kind of skating to where the puck will be, and or, you know, totally new crap we haven't even thought of yet, like that kind of stuff. I would say that's probably on a mechanic side what's holding us back. I think the other thing on like a communication side that's holding us back, look at me answering your question with 100 different things. I don't know. I answer, I guess. But the other thing that is, you know, Drupal has this reputation for being, you know, all kinds of things, overly yes. complex, for being hard to use, for being, you know, for breaking backwards compatibility, for upgrades being a nightmare, for blah, 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 all this stuff. And if you look at it objectively over the past couple of years since Drupal 8 came out, we have made huge strides on every single one of those things. Like the authoring experience of Drupal 8 is better than any version of Drupal before it. The contributed mm-hmm. modules for Drupal 8 are, for the most part, all ported, ready to go. There's a couple of stragglers, but not many. Like contributed modules are not the problem anymore for people adopting Drupal 8. We've made major strides in making sure that new functionality comes out without breaking backwards compatibility, you know, on and on and on. We made all of these great changes and people don't realize it because it's still Drupal. You know what I mean? It's like, so we need like a marketing campaign or something that's like Drupal 8. It's not your grandparents' Drupal or something. You know what I mean? It's just like, hey, people, It's like,
hey, dude, Matt.
Like, yeah.
I think we just found our podcast title right there.
Yeah, it's just, there's so many things that people have, you know, we Drupal 8 was kind of a reckoning for us. Like, we saw a lot of, you know, the practices that had carried us to that point not really working anymore. Like, when it's ready, it was not cutting the mustard anymore. You know, unpredictability release cycles not working for people, waiting 3, 4, 5 years for new functionality not working for people. And so it's sad because we've done so much work to improve those kind of blockers in every regard, but it's really challenging from a quote unquote marketing perspective, because the thing is still called Drupal 8 and people still kind of associate the very, very first Drupal 8 version with the stuff that's today, and it's light years beyond. So I'd say that's maybe another aspect of things on more of the communication side that would hold people back. So if we could fix the misconceptions and we could get the table stakes, the stuff in there and done, I think those two things would propel Drupal into the stratosphere. But I'm curious what you guys think about that question, if I can ask.
So I want to jump in here. I think the whole misconceptions right here, that would be a better job for the Drupal genie, since the Drupal genie is magic. The whole, like,
okay, fair enough.
The little workflow on Drupal.org, that's something that could, like, not easily be done. That's something that could be done by a human. The whole, like, reaching into people's heads and doing the misconception thing, yeah, that's genie-ish.
Yeah, that's right. Genies are better for mass brainwashing, so let's do that.
So what you're saying is you want to mass brainwash developers?
I didn't say that. I just mentioned that a genie could do that, conceivably. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I know. So the question turned back to us was, what's holding up Drupal 8's adoption? Is that right?
I'm not sure it was even just the adoption. It's just, you know, holding it up from being what it could be.
Well, what it could be, right? So, I think right now it's like pretty freaking awesome. It can be everything already. It's, you know, so I don't think there's like any particular feature that's holding it back. I think what Angie said about the misconceptions is like kind of spot on, but I think I think we need a new default theme, you know, other than Bartik. Bartik, you know, it was great in 2010, 2009 when it was being developed, but it's long in the tooth. It's kind of ugly.
It could have been Blue Marine. I mean, we can go back if you want, Mike.
Back Blue Marine. Is that a hashtag? Yeah.
It is now.
I'm just all saying right. That.
New podcast title, Bring Back Blue. Sorry.
No.
I think a new default theme would be fantastic. I like a lot of this whole out of the box stuff with the, you know, Umami and stuff like that, I think goes a long way to that, but maybe have some defaults.
Yep.
Get looking a little prettier. What do you think, Matt Cleave?
I don't know. That's why I asked. Yeah. That's kind of a cop out too. I do like Angie's answer with the marketing. I think there's a perspective out there. There are people that feel that, you know, Drupal's old and not useful, and there are much better solutions to their problems. Something that I think has held up Drupal for a while, my personal opinion, is Drupal trying to be everything for every website. It is your blog. It is, you know, a media corporation's ginormous website. It seems like using the same tool to do both of those things is less than ideal. And trying to support those things. That's why. I raised an eyebrow. I hadn't heard anything about the auto updating, Angie, when you were talking about that earlier. That sounds like, you know, that's the great for, you know, making sure mom's website is not compromised after a security announcement. But I'm trying to imagine how that would work in, you know, some of these big corporate clients that we end up working with.
I don't think it would work in those situations.
And so, yeah. So,
right. I think you just shut it off in that situation.
Yeah. And so having focus, you know, in that regard of a framework that is for giant corporate clients, or a framework that is for blogs, or a mid-range of, you know, content websites or something. I don't know. It's great that there's the power. Go ahead.
Nope, you go ahead.
Finish no, please off. Challenge me. I want to hear it. I'm probably wrong. It's okay.
All right, I'm gonna. No, I don't think you're wrong. That feedback is definitely something that's been brought up. Like, I've been in Drupal now for, oh my God, like 13 years. That's crazy. Anyway, a long time. And I would say that this who are we really argument comes up all the time. Are we for big sites? Are we for small sites? Are we for developers? Are we for non-techie people? Are we for, you know, Grammy.com, or are we for webchick.net? Right? Like, all of these kinds of things come up. But I think if you look around, the truth is, if you want just a blog, that's all you ever want to be with your life, there are better tools for that, and we will never be better than them. If you want a crazy, complex, friggin' enterprise monster website thingy thing, there are better tools for that, or at least equivalent tools for that, you know, if you don't mind paying $1 million in licensing fees. If you want a backend for your, you know, mobile application, there are better tools for that. But what there isn't is a tool that is good, decent, actually, in all of those areas. And so why I like Drupal is because I have clients that never know what the hell they want. And they think they want a blog, but then it turns out they don't. They actually want a shopping cart with a blog. Oh, and by the way, it needs to have a rating system and also this. Drupal is amazing for that because it can start as something small and then grow to whatever needs, you know, they have. Even if it's, okay, and now my boss got this new BlackBerry and it needs to like output crap on his phone or whatever. Like, it's like really great.
Did you just say BlackBerry?
Yeah, do BlackBerries
I
exist?
I did!
Do you think?
It's a Canada thing. We're bringing it back and we're putting the tariff on it. But you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, I think that is Drupal's strength in some ways, is that lack of hard decision-making power, because it is flexible to a fault sometimes, yeah. But it is flexible that it can do all of those things, and you learn one tool instead of seven tools for the job. So that would be my controversial challenge to you on that.
No, not controversial at all. I think that's fair, and that's you know, I've heard that for a long time too. The fact that, you know, with Drupal, your website can grow and expand. Download and extend, right?
Yep.
Community plumbing?
Yep. Even if it's no longer a website anymore, it can still be that. So, yeah.
What will your website look like on your lamp?
We have a lot of great ideas for podcast titles here.
Good luck picking a title. We have so many portables here.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to add, Angie?
Yeah, I don't know. Keep on rocking in the Drupal world, I guess. You guys are great. I really appreciate that you're still doing this podcast like 10 years later. It has to have been 10 years by now.
It's seen a couple of different versions, but we're kind of back in the roots world. I think we're a year and a half into a reboot. And yeah. How long has it been, Mike? Has it been a year, 2 years now or something?
Yeah, it's been over 2 years, right? Because we started right at Drupal 8.
Yep.
Drupal 8 was released. We took it.
Right on.
Yeah.
So almost 3 years then, because Drupal 8's going to turn 3 in November. Awesome.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Angie.
Thank you for having me. This was really, really fun, actually. Yes, it was really nice to see you there. And we'll talk again soon.